Welcome. This is Mark Steiner. We have a lot of ground to cover in the next couple of hours. We're going to start in our own hometown in Baltimore talking about the rash of murders that have taken place. Then we're going to look at some national news, talk about the Trayvon Martin trial, the immigration bill, and the latest on Edward Snowden that complicates, I think, his situation. And then we round out this 2 hours with two people who are one woman who is a major choral composer from Iceland and her husband over here from Iceland to perform in Baltimore. We don't hear much Icelandic music in this city, so we're having them on. They were also our guests while we were in Reykjavik. And so we are returning the favor and bring them on the show. Their concert's tonight at Andi Musique. But first, before we get into all that, this is our day in history that we do every day here on the Mark Steiner Show. This is the birthday of some very important people in our world. Stokely Carmichael was born in 1941. Stokely Carmichael, who became a leader, founder of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, became one of the great civil rights leaders in our country, in our world, who was born in Trinidad. And he is, got to remember him today and his on his birth. He died much too young and left this earth much too young. James Van Der Zee was born on this day. He was born in 1886. And oddly enough, James Van Der Zee was one of the great photographers of our time and in the Harlem Renaissance. And he was actually born in Lenox, Massachusetts, which is odd because it's just down the road from W.E.B. Du Bois, who was born in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. But he was one of the great photographers of all time. And, people say he's one of the greatest black photographers. Well, we put those categories out there. He's one of the greatest photographers of all time. His work just will stand the test of time forever. This is also the birth of Amira Haas, who is a Israeli journalist who has stood with the Palestinians. Her parents survived the Holocaust. She was born in Jerusalem, but now lives among the Palestinian people and defends them. She has recently been indicted because she said Palestinian stone throwers have a right to throw stones. It's their only way of standing up to Israeli guns and tanks and the occupation. She still writes and does not stop writing. She was born in 1956. On this day, Leon Panetta was born, who was Secretary of Defense, of course, and a congressman. One of the greatest filmmakers and comedians of all time was born today, Mel Brooks, who I loved. And Rod Serling, who created some of our greatest TV shows, passed away on this day in 1975. This is also the day in our history that Thurgood Marshall announced his retirement from the United States Supreme Court. After 24 years in the Supreme Court, and we got another justice in his place, Thomas. I'll leave it there. This was the day when the Alambaki decision took place in the Supreme Court, so-called reverse discrimination in terms of affirmative action. This was the day in 1971. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned the draft evasion conviction of Muhammad Ali. A year before that, he stood before the Supreme Court, Muhammad Ali did, regarding his refusal to be inducted into the U.S. Army. This was the day the Stonewall riots were taking place in New York in 1969. That was the start of the gay rights movement. And this was also the day that Israel annexed East Jerusalem that began the troubles we have today. This was the day that Malcolm X founded the OAAU, the Organization of African American Unity, and the day the Irish Civil War began in 1922, fighting to end the colonialist domination of Ireland by Britain. This was the day that – so many things happened this day. Let me close with this one so we can jump into our conversation. This was the day in 1839 that Sinke, who was originally known as Sengbe, was a Mende king who was captured off the coast of Africa and put into slavery and sold into slavery in Cuba. And he and his companions launched a successful slave revolt on the ship Amistad today in 1839. This is also the day that the Freedmen's Bank closed with $3 million in deposits from free black people. It closed in 1874, which is a great tragedy for many folks in that period, losing a lot when that happened. And speaking of tragedies, we have here in Baltimore what we can consider, not consider, what is a tragedy. There are people's names that we never heard of before, we don't think about. People's names like Daryl Banks, who's 28 years old, or Anjou Witherspoon, who's 27 years old, or Danae Jones, who's an 18-year-old young woman sitting on her porch, on her stoop, Omar Shorter, 32 years old, Don Kildardon, 37, Javante Burgess, who was 20, and Joyce Allison was a 49-year-old woman, Maurice Taylor, 37 years old. Among the 13 people who were murdered since last Friday on the streets of Baltimore, 13 people killed, 35 wounded. And so people are trying to get a grip on this, and we have a panel with us here in the studio to help us put a grip on it. Krishana Davis is back with us, multi-platform journalist, of course, Afro-American reporter. Good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Who's going to dash off here and tape square off with Richard Scheer to be aired on Sunday. Kimberly Armstrong's with us, community advocate, author, speaker, who lost her son to violence, and good to have you in the studio. Kimberly, good to see you again.
Good to be here.
Munir Bahar is with us, director of Core Fitness, who has been working with young people in our communities for a long time. Joined us a while back on a totally different issue. Munir, good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Antero Pietila is with us. Antero Pietila is author of the book Not in My Neighborhood, How Bigotry Shaped a Great American City, and spoke recently at the Forum on Violence that took place here this week at Morgan State University, and for 35 years was a writer for The Sun. Good to have you in the studio, Antero.
Thank you, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow at gmail.com. You can link to us at, you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, or you can just jump on our Facebook pages, 410-319-8888. So where do we begin? Part of this was inspired in a way by what has happened over the last 10 days, the way it's been reported by much of the media, just in terms of almost statistically reported, not reported as this kind of human tragedy in our communities and what we have to do to address it. And I remember one of the things that you were saying, Antero, let me just start with you, Antero, because you've been covering this for 35 years, a long time. And you spoke at Morgan, and one of the things I read you saying on Facebook was that you're about to say what you have to say, and kind of the critics be damned, you wanted to put out there. Would you want to talk to us a bit about what you said at that meeting here at Morgan State University's campus on the homicides we're facing?
Yeah, we are dealing with a very surreal situation. Here we are in a crisis in this city, and I don't see any widespread outrage, which of course means that many of the people that live in this city are untouched by all of this. And so what I said at Morgan was that this is no longer a policing crisis. This is no longer a prosecutor crisis. This is a community crisis where we are now so co-opted by the drug culture and the money in that culture that feeds violence that we are closing our eyes and we don't want to talk about this. It's kind of interesting how corrosive the influence of drugs have been. And there are lots of people in the neighborhoods that are affected by these murders, where people really depend on the money that comes from drugs or other illegal activity. And therefore, in my view, now other people may have different views, in my view, they are willing to close their eyes. If Johnny is doing something, that's fine. But if it is not Johnny, then it is a different story. And it is Johnny's involvement in illegal activities is excused because Johnny is kicking back some money into household budget, buying some sneakers with flashing lights, and so we have this kind of forgiveness when it concerns our family members. In addition to that, overall we have no one opinion about drugs. We don't agree on whether there should be decriminalization or not. Many of us use drugs in one form or another. So all of this is very vague, and I think that all this comes to play in the situation where we are today. So if we have lots of co-opted people, they are not going to help the police even if they know who might be responsible in a given situation. That was my take.
Kimberly.
I think that drugs only play a small part in it. I think poverty is more of the issue. You have so many people just trying to survive today. Is that so many young people in homes that are being raised predominantly by single African-American women who are usually working, going to school, and just trying to make it. And like this young man said earlier about men stepping up, we have come to a place where the moral value of just life has been diminished. And also by a lot of men leaving the home and not coming back into the community. My thing was when I saw all these murders, I said, where are the soldiers? Because we are strict. We are at war. Where are the soldiers? Where are the people that really come out into the community and say, hell no, we're not taking this anymore? And I think that men have a responsibility to come out and to help us because we need help. But so far, so often you see the battle between these young men trying to fight for whatever their territory is. And when you talk about drugs, they're not making a whole lot of money. The drug game is not as it used to be. You don't have any more kingpins. You have little young boys who get a couple of $100 who want to go buy tennis shoes. And sometimes they do live in a family way as though the mother is not so much that she's or they are turning their head. They see it as a mechanism of survival. So I have never been in trouble before. Okay, but at the same time, if it comes to a point where so I have to survive and it comes down to a cheeseburger, I may have to hurt somebody because I want to eat too. Not so much I'm hurting you because I want to, but I'm hurting you because I have to.
Maneer.
Yeah, I agree. You know, when we look at the root cause of a lot of the violence that's taking place, a symptom of the absence of men is an out-of-control neighborhood. Children who grow up without respect for their parents. Children who grow up without respect for women, without respect for themselves. Children who grow up without the education of moral behavior, or correct moral behavior. So when men aren't around, and you know, we understand the importance of women, but women are around. The mothers have been raising us for years. I was raised single-handedly by my mother, but it takes a man and a woman to give a proper balance of education and nourishment to a child. So when the men are absent, then it leaves children to get that what they would normally get from their fathers from TV, from the streets, from, you know, the influence at school. So a root cause of the disruption of life in our cities is the absence of men to step up and provide that balance and balance out what our women, our mothers, our aunts, our grandmothers, you know, have been literally given to children in Baltimore City for years. Not all men, but just we need more men. We do have good fathers and husbands out here,
no,
but we need more.
Krishana.
So I see two issues. One is people are desensitized to what violence is in our communities. When I posted on Facebook about a lot of the different murders, people said, well, it's Baltimore, that's normal, it's the summertime, it's just a spike in crime. So I think the first issue is that people are, you know, constantly being flooded with, you know, another shooting occurred, and they're to the point that they don't value a human life anymore. They think that it is just a number, it's just a statistic. So there isn't that, you know, that they're having a disconnect. People aren't talking about the families. People aren't talking about, you know, the mothers who are experiencing the loss of their children. So I think because of the way, a little bit of the way it's being covered, people are just seeing it as numbers. They're just statistics. There's no connection. And the second one, I think in Baltimore, there is, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying about you know, this poverty in Baltimore. Like, Baltimore is at a cusp, and it's about to pop. I mean, you're looking at poverty. You're looking at, you know, 12% unemployment for African Americans. You're looking at a failing education system. You're looking at a lot of these issues, and what people are failing to realize is that those are the core issues. When people, those things make people angry, and when people are angry, they're going to act out. If you couple that with, you know, the heat of the summer and a lot of the issues that are going in communities, that's going to cause an issue whether there's a police presence or not.
So you all kind of opened this up from very different angles. I think that, and I want to explore those angles. So let me do something first. Let me go to the phones, get a couple of callers in here, and come back to this. Because if we're talking about addressing the issues of poverty, talk about what that means. And that's part of the systemic issue we never talk about. And why this deindustrialization and our welfare system in many ways took men out of the picture and continues to put men out of the picture and scares them off from even being with their families, which is part of the problem that Joe Jones and I and others have been talking about now. We're going to do a whole series, by the way, starting in September every month on just that issue for a whole year until the next Father's Day. And the issue of the drug trade. And if Neil was here, the former major in the police department, Neil Franklin, he would say, we have to legalize it. You can't decriminalize it. You have to legalize it. Decriminalize it only leaves it in the gangs. Doesn't end the problem. So we're going to wrestle with these things. First goes 410-319-8888. Alex, you're on the air. Alex, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I had a bunch of comments I wanted to say about guns and the Second Amendment and and the lack of any response by the current administration to all the killings, gun violence that's going on in the inner cities. But that's kind of complicating it. Like, the simple fact is that it's not drugs. It's the fact that the drug market, it is a market that is unregulated. And I mean, imagine, look at the way that that corporations fight amongst each other. Imagine if McDonald's and Burger King were totally unregulated. I mean, as soon as they set up a shop on a corner, there would be violence. Burger King would come over and try to take them down. I mean, the drugs have to be regulated for this violence to stop. I mean, education's a part, and of course, the whole reason why these markets exist is because they're allowed to in these impoverished areas. But that's all kind of superfluous. Like, the market's got to be regulated. Education, money, none of it's going to stop the violence, I believe, until the government steps in and regulates the drug market. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alison. He raised one of the issues I was going to raise. Let's raise the issue. He calls it regulation. I just put it out there, legalization. Or the medicalization of the use of heroin and cocaine. And now people disagree with that, but let's talk about this for a minute. Because a lot of this violence is fueled by turf wars over drugs. A lot of it is fueled.
But what we see, we don't see the big guys, you know, who are bringing, because I don't know a 12-year-old that has a plane or a boat that can bring these drugs into the United States of America. What I see are little people making a little bit of money, but the big people who are really making the money, they are not the ones who are being locked up. You know, it's the little boys on the corner making a little teeny bit of money. So when we talk about gangs, when I hear people talk about these young people or little minute people who are supposed to be gangs, I'm thinking that they should be a little bit more organized, like the mafia or something. You know, and it's like we keep talking about drugs, but where do we come in and say and look at the people and how so much drugs get into our community? The same thing I say about guns. How is it that in our community, and this is across the nation, where you have so many guns in our community where it's easier for our children to walk out the back door, get a gun, but they can't get a decent book or some fruit and vegetables? That's the cause of it. So how is it that we continue to have so many guns in our community, and where are they coming from?
Yeah, and I would like to add on that. I mean, whether drugs are legal or illegal, that doesn't stop the effect of drugs on someone's mind, on someone's spiritual and mental state. So you have people committing acts of violence not because of the drug made them do it, but the drug alters the mind. It alters perception. It alters decision-making. So again, whether it's legal or illegal, people on drugs are going to act irrationally. And we have a lot of people in Baltimore City on drugs, even legal drugs.
Methadone.
Alcohol is a legal drug. And some of the murders that have taken place resulted actually from a fight at a nightclub, Mirage. So this wasn't drug-related. This was a party, which an incident happened. More than likely, folks were drunk, got out of hand, some folks got murdered, and there's been some retaliation. So it's the altering of people's mental state that causes them to not value their life and not value someone else's life, and it makes it easier. If people were thinking clearly, if people were emotionally and spiritually and mentally clearer up here, then they wouldn't be making some of these decisions.
Well, I mean, let me push back a little bit on that. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I don't think it's people being on drugs who are doing the murders. I think people, not all the killings in Baltimore are about the drug trade. Some are about personal revenge. The case that we saw today, the woman who died last night and the two women who were wounded, that could be a personal revenge case. That's what the police are assuming at the moment. We don't know. That was what Krishana found out before she came in, right?
Yeah. So
we don't know about that.
So, right, like three women were killed in Northeast Baltimore. It was a shooting. One of the women, they were congregating on a porch. One of the women left the porch and apparently came back. They're not saying, confirming if the suspect who shot was a woman or not. But there seemed to be a neighborhood dispute in the area. And the police said they just left the neighborhood 15 minutes before. They were patrolling.
So we don't know. So not every murder or shooting is fueled by the drug trade, but a lot are. It's not people being high. It's the drug trade. It's the turf wars. It's young people saying, we own this piece of land and we're going to do what we want, or you owe me money for what I gave you the week and you didn't pay me, so now you're going to pay this way. I mean, so when people talk about legalization, they're talking about taking the violence out of it, just like the legalization of alcohol when it became, when prohibition ended, more people may have started using alcohol again, but there was no more people being killed because of selling alcohol again. So that's the issue when they talk about legalization, is taking the violence out of the trade. And then human beings individually and communities individually have to address questions of addiction that arise in every community. I mean, that says you have – no. Every community has issues with addiction of some kind or another, whether it's alcohol or cocaine or heroin or driving fast cars or chasing too many men or women. I mean, it's all kinds of addictions in this planet. You know? I mean – I'm sorry. Go ahead. You want to say
Entourage. Just real quick, the decisions that people make or the altered decisions because of the influence of drugs doesn't just happen right when you're taking a drug. If you are steadily using drugs, even when you are quote-unquote sober, your mental capacity is altered. So it's not that you have to be high to shoot someone and kill them, and we make that a drug-related incident. If you are constantly using, and the majority of our young people in Baltimore City right now are abusing some type of substance. This is the reality. It is the cool thing to get high. So if you're getting high every day, you may be sober on Thursday, shoot somebody on Thursday night, but the decision that you made to take someone's life was clearly something that altered up here, other off its normal course of value in life.
And I think that legalizing drugs is an easy way out, because if people are going to get high, they're going to get high. So then even if they legalize it, it becomes a point of where the drug's going to be. How do you do that? Then you could have still have violence where they start robbing people, because if they know where the drugs are being stashed, whether it's a pharmacy or whatever, because if people want to get high, they're going to get high. And when we look at legalizing things, look at methadone, okay? When I go down to Gay Street and North Avenue, it's a disgrace. It is an absolute disgrace. Now, methadone is a legal drug. These are usually people who are being weaned off of heroin.
Right.
And when I look down, when I go down to North Avenue and Gay Street, which is in my neighborhood, it's an absolute disgrace. It looks awful. Do I want to live in that neighborhood? No. I see grown people out there with their children coming from a methadone clinic. But what kind of message is that sending?
I understand that, but I think that's different than the idea of what he was talking about, regulating, of taking the violence out of the drug market. People don't shoot people because they want to buy a six-pack of beer.
No, I would beg to differ.
Well, not very many people shoot people to get a six-pack of beer.
that doesn't happen, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, you know, every once in a while that could happen. But, I mean, it's not like something that is that creates this kind of volume of violence that we're faced with in our communities.
And I think you raised an interesting point, Mark, because you were talking about the difference in at the addiction, the crimes from addiction, and the crimes from the trade. And if you look at prohibition, I mean, they drastically decreased in crimes after there was regulation. So, I mean, I don't know if regulation is the answer, but it definitely would kind of create a more stability and balance in the drug market.
So what I'm going to answer, we're going to say, and then I want to come back to the men issue that we talked about a minute ago, which I think is really important.
As a city and society, we do not want to deal with inconvenient truths. And one of the inconvenient truths is this conspiracy of silence about drugs and the relationship how I've been in this town now since 1969, and I have seen lots of police commissioners come and go. I have seen lots of strategies tried. And more I'm coming to the conclusion that this is not really a police problem. This is that the whole community is paralyzed by the pervasiveness of drugs and the economic influence that drugs have. That's number one. And the number two is, and Ms. Armstrong raised this question, is how about these big guys? And this is another inconvenient truth that we don't deal with. We did try to deal with that in 1992 when Circuit Court Judge Kenneth Levon Johnson impaneled a grand jury to look into the drug trade. And the grand jury made certain connections between legitimate businesses as money laundering devices and issued a report, and the impact of that report, there were two consequences. Number one, all the evidence in that grand jury investigation was quashed, meaning that it was destroyed. And number two, an investigation was started, and the center, the topic, the target of the investigation was not drug trade and the big boys, but Judge Kenneth LaVon Johnson, whether he was fit to continue as a judge.
I remember that. Right. And he was one who fought hard to expose a lot of truths, and he was on the show many times in those years, in the 90s, talking about that. And I think that's true. And I see, so I think this is all part of kind of what we have to deal with, the reality of the corruption of the system, and we do face that. Carl Stokes called it out, but he was pushed back when he called it out because people leapt all over him when he called it out the other day, saying there's, part of it is fueled by this corruption. To say that every police officer is corrupt is absurd. To say we don't have corrupt police officers involved in drug trade and not admit that is ridiculous. Of course they are. It wouldn't be happening if that didn't exist on some level. We have 2 minutes left in the segment. I do want to get – not in the segment. We're going to come back and continue this after the break and go to our callers. And Trinity, you're the next caller up. But I do want to get into the issue of men and the work that a lot of people are doing in this community to address the absence of men in families' lives and men in people's lives. I was at a place the other day where – I will mention no names, but one guy was an African-American man who's about my age, and the other man was a white person who is a little older than me, and asked the African-American person, was there a man in your family when you were growing up in the projects in your neighborhood? And he was asking a man who was in his 60s, and his response was, when I was young, because we all remember this, people my age, our age, when I was young, almost every family in the projects, every family in the neighborhood, there was a man in the house. There was somebody there who worked or didn't work, but there were men all over the place. And there's always this assumption, I think, on part of some of the white community, that there were never any black men in the community taking care of their families, which is an absurd notion. And people are really struggling to figure out how to get back to a place where men step up. We'll come back to that thought when we come back. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On the way back to our conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. More information at www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org. Their banner is always there. Antro Pietilis in the studio, author of the book Not My Neighborhood, How Bigotry Shaped an American City, and for 35 years, a journalist with the Baltimore Sun. Munir Bahar, community activist, director of Core Fitness. Kimberly Armstrong, community advocate, author, speaker, who fights for justice and changing our criminal justice system, is in our studio along with Krishana Davis, a reporter for the Afro-American newspapers and a multi-platform journalist. 410-319-8888. Go to the phones. Come back to our question about fathers. Trinity, you're on the air. Hi, Trinity, you're on the air.
Hello.
Welcome. Trinity, you're on the air.
Okay, yes. I haven't been listening to everything, but the focus of what you're dealing with is too narrow in all the little areas. The focus needs to be on the non-life capitalistic exploiting system of this country, which has been in effect for years and is continuing. And all these things that you're talking about emanate from the fact that capitalism is meant to exploit people. So your exploitation is going to be there at every turn, whether it's not being able to get fresh food, whether it's being invaded with drugs and guns in your neighborhood, et cetera, whether it's not knowing yourself and your history is because of the capitalistic base of this country. And I'm not trying to oversimplify it. It's a lot of complication that comes in with that. Hello?
No, I listen, Trinity, I think you raised an important subject. And let's come to fathers here, but let's raise this issue for a minute. I mean, there's a lot of people who would say that, you know, when you talk about poverty, I mean, in order to address the system, the issues we face here, like systemic issues like poverty that you were talking about, Kimberly, means that you'd have to have massive investment on the part of our government in changing the structure of this economic system to do away with poverty, to put people to work. And that is altering the very nature of capitalism itself to do that, to rebuild bridges, to rebuild schools, to rebuild cities, to put people to work, to make that happen. That does attack the nature of capitalism itself. Mm-hmm. And so that's an issue that people do not want to address because it's part of the overarching problem, which I think bottom line is poverty and capitalism. I think Munir doesn't agree, so go ahead.
Not with your point, but kind of, and what the caller says is in terms of it being narrow, here's the thing, and here's the problem that I disagree with a lot, is when we are trying to come up with solutions and things, we start getting on this big old grand scale and come up with these very big abstract solutions. Look, point is right now, our children are under fire. Okay, what can we do tomorrow? We can't go fight Walmart or McDonald's tomorrow. But what we can right now, some men can step up right now and say, you know what, tonight at 7 o'clock, we're going to go to the playground and we're going to make sure that every kid can enjoy their night at that playground and they are safe. Or, like the brother was saying, what someone can do is step up and say, you know what, I saw what happened last night. Let me go forth and tell these officers what really happened. I know the dude who shot those three girls. Let us help to get him behind bars. So it's things we can do right now. Some of the bigger battles are important, but we're not even fighting the small battles. And on the topic, the whole issue of men, if men just stepped up their presence, a lot of any man who rapes or murders or commits any act of violence towards kids or women, that is a coward. And cowards do not stand up in the face of strength. So if men use their presence to show these cowards, you are not going to disrupt our families in Baltimore,
right,
then things can change tomorrow. The bigger fights are important. But if we're not even fighting the smaller battles, the big battles mean nothing.
I'm going to say amen to that. Amen to that. We all know that capitalism is alive and well, right? That's a part of what this nation has been built on, is capitalism. We know, we understand that. But like he said, I'm a strong African-American woman, and I fight many, many battles.
Yes, you do.
But nothing feels safer than having a man to step up to the plate so that I don't have to bear all the weight myself. So what you see in our community, you have so many women who've been fighting the battle, and now the older ones are getting tired. And some of the younger ones don't know how to fight, okay? So when do we get to a point where those older women who start to teach the young girls how to fight, but fight in a way that you also allow the man to come in and have his place, whether it be in the home, whether it be in the community, whether it be in the church or somewhere, because guess what? I'm getting tired, okay? And I want to see men to step up to the plate. I'm tired of having me being the one to go out on the corner and talking to these young men or teaching them how to tie a tie or taking them somewhere to fill out a job application. When I see now you do have good men, especially in Baltimore City. It's a lot of good men who do a lot of great work who do not get the recognition or
too.
The credibility or even the resources and the funds to continue to do the kind of work that they do. Excellent men. You know who I'm talking about. Cameron Miles, David Miller, a whole bunch of other host of men who do great things. But at the same time, it's being...
It's not enough.
Right. And you need to... I want to feel safe in my community.
So to pull up what you were just saying, before we go back to the phones, get a call in here. We have about 10 minutes left in this segment. This is really important. I think that, Munir, what you were saying, I think is true. Whether it's what the people we're talking about are the unknowns who do Big Brothers and Big Sisters or Big Brothers and Sisters and work with a young mentee or one of my producers, Bobby Marvin Holmes, he said he has 5 mentees he works with out in the community. So a lot of men who do that in this community. So what I'm going to suggest, though, is you can't mentor your way out of this problem without a kind of a joint effort of taking on the larger issues as you're taking on the immediate issues. You know, it was like it harkens back to me to the days of, let's say, I'll make this quick, the Panther Party back in the late 60s, where both were taking place, with the struggle to change the way society's systemic issues were and really fighting that, at the same time creating programs and staying on the corner, stopping the violence, being a man to a young man, feeding kids in the street. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't think you can do one without the other.
Well, I mean, if we look at even like apartheid South Africa, you know, these folks lived in the most hellish, oppressive conditions, but they were not mowing each other down every night.
They are now, though.
Well, I mean, because of the influx of a lot of things we're talking about, men have been becoming absent as well as the drugs. But I'm just saying people are resilient. And even despite of, quote unquote, oppression or capitalism or other things, that doesn't mean I have to kill my brother. That doesn't mean I have to kill my sister. So just because these things exist, there's still something missing that would cause the moral fiber to
right.
not be present. With
right.
young people thinking they have the right to kill somebody else because he looked at me funny
but
or
I think
he stepped on my shoes.
What you're looking at is a culture shift, though. Like, there seems to be a mindset in the younger culture now where, like I said, there's a desensitized, since they're desensitized. They don't understand,
yeah.
you know, what a life means. So they don't really take it. They take it for granted. I mean, even you look at you talking about young men stepping up, but a lot of young women with kids don't even want the father to be in the household. They don't want them to be in the relationship. They say, I can do it all by myself. So it takes both sides to understand what's going on, because it can't just be a man stepping up and saying, like, I want to be in my household if the woman's pushing him out on the back end as well. So it has to be kind of that joint collective effort. So there has to be some type of overhaul. There has to be some push in the community to tell people, like, this is what we have to do. So, I mean, if it's people standing on street corners and telling people, like, you know, we have to get out and march and do things, I mean, that's what has to be done. But something has to be done.
Let me go to the phones here again, 410-319-8888. I think it's the next caller up is Samaj. Is that right? Samaj, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I'm listening to the tape delay. thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
And Mark, I put so much kudos to you, sir, and what you've been doing throughout the years, and your shift to Morgan, and I just love you, man. And we need more Mark Steiners of all races, creeds, and colors. Like, I'm really bothered that they have taken, for whatever reason, I'm a little emotional right now, so I can't even think of a gentleman's name that used to be on 95.9 in the afternoon. But let me just get to the point. You kind of stole my thunder, because I heard the gentleman speaking to, and I, like the sister, also announced amen in my listening to what he was saying as far as soldiers being available and ready on a day-to-day basis and in the most deepest part of the neighborhoods and making the presence felt. But what I was going to say, exactly what you chimed in on, is that's all noble, but it's ineffective if it's not a collective with the police authority and the powers that be that also create a safety net with those men that want to step out and step into the community. I do a lot with sports. I'm heavily involved with the Forest Park Little Leagues. I know a lot of those men on football and basketball are highly committed, and I've been very bothered throughout the years. I'm 45 years old, and when I was coming up, you know, there was a rec center in every neighborhood,
right?
And it wasn't just the PAL organization with the police recs. It was citywide recs. And I know we've all dealt with budget constraints and, you know, and the economy and all of that, and cuts have to be made. But if it's not a collective a force between city legislature, the educational involvement, educational institutions, men in the neighborhood, women in the neighborhood, if it's not all a collective, it's not going to work. And I'm so thankful that you brought up the Black Panther Party, because that speaks to another problem. When we do come together and organize, the first thing that happens when you start making a positive influence is that the negative powers that want things to remain in the status quo will quickly intervene, quickly invade, and destroy everything that is done towards a positive effort. And when I think back in history...
Samaj, I have to come back to the panel because we're running out of time here, and I want people to wrestle with what you were just saying, because that's one of the things we read about, one of the marketing things... Martin Luther King's quotes last night about capitalism and communism. He said, it's the collective and the individual. It has to come together if we're going to make this change. And, you know, the police have to begin to respect Black men in the community who are doing this work, because that's part of the problem as well. You can come in the community to work, and the police don't respect the work you are doing, that you're in the way. You know, that is part of the issue.
But I think if you look at the police department, they now have that community partnership effort, which I think has been a really instrumental part. I mean, they are out and about. They are in the community. So when you couple that with a lot of the things, I mean, they can't solve everything and they can't be everywhere. But that has been one initiative that I think has really helped to kind of bridge a little bit of the gap between the police department and citizens.
Yeah, I mean, I meet with Melvin Russell on Monday.
Well, I think he's a really decent human being.
The leadership of the Baltimore City Police Department, they were at the public safety meeting this past week with the council, and you know they are supporting this march that we're having on July 5th. But I want to say one thing real quick is when we talk about men, you know, it's like some people get the perception that we're talking about like some aliens. When we say men, we're talking about people in law enforcement, men in, you know, the health profession, men in all professions, you, me, like men include men of everybody. So we don't have to say it needs to be a collective. We are talking about a collective effort of men in across all facets of city life. What happens, we put down our professional categories or titles and we just say as fathers, as husbands, as sons, we're going to step up with this effort.
Very quickly, Kimberly, because we're just about out of time.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that Melvin Russell has been doing this kind of work for a long time, but because he has not been, you know, really gotten the credibility or even got some of the recognition in the community or the media about what he's doing, is that people think that for some reason that the community and the police have not had a community initiative. They have. It's just that a lot of people didn't know about it, you know. And to go back to what she said about people valuing life, I'm going to share this quick story with you. When my son was murdered almost 10 years ago. And as we went to his viewing, at the time my oldest son was 21. And as my son was laying in the casket, my son just stood over top of him, never shed a tear, never said anything. He just stood there the whole entire time, okay? And he said to me at 21, he said, "Mom," he said, "he just looks like he's asleep." And I had to turn and look at my son. And I said, "He's not asleep." I said, "He's dead, and he's never coming back." And what that said to me, it said to me that my son at the age of 21, even though he was legally declared a man, he still didn't really understand what death was. So I said, if my son at 21 didn't understand that his brother was dead, if you have so many other young kids out here who understand the same thing, is that they don't understand life because they don't even understand death.
That's a very powerful statement. And I let me say that we are going to come back, and I think this is to be a constant kind of weekly conversation with ourselves here on the show around this issue from all the perspectives that like we have had today. It's a complex question. It's going to take complex answers. And people who are deeply involved from all the generations and across the racial lines, across our class lines, to make this work. And I want to thank all of you for actually the work you do, because you all do work to try to make this place a better place. Entre Pietà, with the work you did in writing Not My Neighborhood, How Bigotry Shaped a Great American City, is a book everybody should read to understand how we got this place in Baltimore in the first place and how racism and other things played a role in that. Entre's book is just an amazing piece of work. I want to thank Muni Bahar for all the work he's done and the struggles he's gone through to get to the place he is today, because he speaks from a place, understands from this from all corners. And Muni, thank you for coming in
today. Thank you.
Looking in shape too, brother.
I did some push-ups this morning.
Kimberly Armstrong, who's never stopped struggling in our communities to fight for justice for her sons and to fight for our community. I want to thank you for being here again.
Thank you,
Mark. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
And Krishana Davis, one of our new young crusading journalists who's out there finally fighting and writing some really good articles in the Afro-American. You should check out what she does. She's doing some excellent work over there. Krishana, thanks so much.
It's great seeing you again, Mark.
Folks, we're going to take a very brief break. We're going to go to look at national politics, international issues. We're going to be talking about the Zimmerman trial around Trayvon Martin's murder. We're going to look at issues in immigration, and we're going to look at some of the Edward Snowden issues as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back.